This is the detail that should make everyone's skin crawl. When Cereblab published their findings, the upload stopped immediately, instantly, without users needing to download a software patch, meaning XAI just flipped a switch on their server side. They knew exactly what they were doing. This wasn't a bug. You don't accidentally build infrastructure that silently packages up entire repositories and uploads them. That takes deliberate engineering work, and you don't have a kill switch ready to go unless you knew you might need it. Hey everyone, welcome back to Rubber Duck Radio. I'm Tim Williams. We're hitting episode 25 with gusto.
And I'm Paul Mason. Tim, you've got that look that I built something and I can't stop thinking about it.
Is it that obvious?
Yeah, a little bit. You've been sending me beta builds at 6 in the evening for like weeks now. I'd wake up and there'd be 3 test flight notifications and a message that just says, try the recipe thing now.
Guilty as charged. All right, so today's episode is going to be a bit different. We've got 2 big topics. The first one is genuinely personal. I built an app. It's called Tomte, and it's been consuming my life outside of the regular day job in the best possible way for the past couple weeks. I want to walk you through the whole journey, why I built it, the hard technical decisions, the moments where it clicked.
And I've been using the beta for a while now. Love it. It fills this niche I didn't even know I had. A private, powerful, set and forget personal agent that just lives on your machine. No subscription, no cloud, no nonsense.
That's exactly the pitch. Then in the second half, we're going to get into something significantly darker, the Grok build code harvesting scandal. Grok 4.5 suspiciously timed leap in capability, and why SpaceX buying Cursor for $60 billion should make every developer seriously reconsider where their code lives. I've got a timeline that, when you line it all up, paints a pretty damning picture.
Yeah, that one's a lot. I've got thoughts. I think a lot of developers have been feeling uneasy and they couldn't quite articulate why. I think we're going to articulate it for them.
All right, let's start with the fun stuff, Tomte. So here's the origin story. I love playing with local AI. We've talked about it on this show a bunch. Running models on my own hardware, the privacy, the tinkering, the satisfaction of it all being yours. But I realized I wanted something more than a playground. I wanted a set and forget agent that's always on. Something that knows my documents, knows my messages, remembers things I tell it, and never ever sends a single byte to anyone's cloud. Not ours, not anyone's.
Right, and the key phrase there is always on. Not open this terminal, load the model, ask a question, close it, repeat tomorrow, like actually living on the machine, indexing while you sleep, ready when you need it, one keystroke away.
Exactly. And I thought, I can't be the only person who wants this. There might actually be a market for a private AI assistant that regular people can use. So I decided to build it as a real polished Mac app, not a CLI tool, not a Python script. A proper app with a menu bar icon and a hotkey and everything. The first major hurdle I hit was connectivity.
Because the dream is, agent runs on your Mac, but you can talk to it from your phone, and those two things need to talk to each other securely.
Right, and my natural instinct was Tailscale. I use it for everything. It keeps all my computers connected, my home lab, my dev machines. It's brilliant. But I took a step back and realized, your average user, someone who just bought a MacBook at the Apple store, they're not going to set up a tailnet. They're not going to configure ACLs and subnet routers. That's a developer thing, and I wanted this to work for anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I use Tailscale too, but I'm also the kind of person who thinks configuring a subnet router is a fun Saturday afternoon. Not exactly the target demographic for a consumer app. So what'd you land on?
I started looking around for alternatives and I landed on something that's been sitting right under our noses for over a decade, Apple's Bonjour. It's the zero config networking protocol that powers AirDrop, AirPlay, Handoff, all that stuff. MDNS, DNS, SD, these protocols have been baked into macOS and iOS since forever. And I thought, okay, theoretically, this should work for device-to-device pairing, but I genuinely didn't know if it would be reliable enough for a persistent agent connection.
That's a big bet, though. Bonjour is great for finding a printer on your network, but for a persistent agent connection that needs to handle streaming responses and tool calls, that's a different ball game.
That's exactly what I needed to test. So I set up a whole matrix of test scenarios, different network types, different router configurations, Mac to Mac, Mac to iPhone, even threw in some mesh networks and guest networks just to see what would break. I inspected every connection, measured latency, tested what happens when the network changes, when the Mac goes to sleep and wakes up, and to my genuine surprise, it worked better than I expected. Way better. The pairing process was so simple, basically like pairing AirPods, that I'd feel comfortable handing it to someone who's never opened Terminal in their life.
And that's the thing about Bonjour. When it works, it's like magic. Apple spent years and years hardening that stack. It's not some janky open source library held together with hope and a prayer. It's production infrastructure that's been battle tested across a billion devices.
100%. And the connection is end-to-end encrypted, so your data never touches a relay server, never goes through anyone's cloud. It's just your phone talking directly to your Mac. So with the connectivity layer solved, I moved on to the actual brain of the thing. And this is where it got genuinely hard.
Let's talk about the libraries first, because I think people should understand what's under the hood here. You open source two pretty significant pieces of infrastructure.
Yeah, so there's a iCloud and AIMessage, both on my GitHub, both open source, Apache or MIT, take your pick. iCloud watches your iCloud Drive folder, everything in there, PDFs, scanned documents, images with text, even audio and video files. It runs OCR locally using Apple's Vision framework, transcribes audio with Whisper, extracts text, runs it through a local LLM for enrichment, summaries, document types, key facts, tags, and then embeds everything into a SQLite index. The whole thing runs as a background daemon. You drop a file in iCloud Drive, it finds it, indexes it, and makes it searchable. No cloud involved.
And then eMessage does the same thing, but for your messages history, 15 years of conversations, searchable in seconds. And it's read only by construction. The chat database is opened with CellET open reacalbed. There's a second enforcement layer at the SQL level. It can't write, it can only search.
Exactly, and both libraries speak MCP, the Model Context Protocol, so any MCP-capable agent can use them. Claude Desktop, Claude Code, Codex, LM Studio, whatever. The tools are search your documents, get a document with citations, search your messages, get a conversation with surrounding context. So now I had these two libraries that could give an agent deep knowledge of your personal data. The question was, could I wrap them in a tiny agentic loop that runs on consumer hardware?
And by consumer hardware, you mean?
An Apple M-series processor with 16 gigs of RAM. That's probably the single most common MacBook configuration in the world right now. And these models, even the small ones, they're hungry. I picked Gemma 4 for the back end, and let me tell you why. It has an absolutely amazing quality to performance ratio for its size, like shockingly good. But fitting it into a workable memory budget, along with the agent harness, the tool definitions, the context window, that was a real engineering challenge. I needed everything, model, harness, context, to fit in about 11 gigs, leaving room for the OS and other apps.
So what did the testing actually look like? And be honest, I know you don't just vibe it out and say, yeah, seems fine.
No, definitely not. I built a full testing rubric and a model harness tester. I went through a rigorous set of tests, like dozens and dozens of iterations. Each run, I'd evaluate the quality of the agent's responses, measure latency, check memory usage, prune tools that weren't pulling their weight, tweak tool definitions until the model understood them reliably. It was this incredibly tight feedback loop. Run the test, find the failure, fix the harness, run again, over and over, for weeks.
That's the part people never see, right? Everyone thinks AI just magically works. They don't realize someone spent 3 weeks tweaking tool definitions so the model stops trying to search for documents with an empty query string, or stops calling the same tool in an infinite loop.
Oh my God, the infinite loop thing, you have no idea how real that is. There was a whole week where the agent would find the right document, read it, and then search for it again. Just couldn't stop itself. But here's the thing, when I finally got it dialed in, I ran the full stack on my MacBook Air M2, and that was the moment. The moment that sold me that this wasn't just a fun project. The full harness with Gemma 4 fit into about 11 gigs of RAM. It was snappy. Not local AI that's good enough for a hobby project. I mean, genuinely responsive. You ask a question and it just answers. On a fanless laptop.
On an Air, the one without a fan. That's genuinely impressive. I've run models on an Air and let's just say it hasn't always been snappy.
That's what I'm saying. And the Air is key. If it works well on an Air, it works well on basically anything Apple ships. So at that point, I built the full Mac app and started heavily testing it against my own iCloud files and messages. Real world stuff.
All right, walk me through the greatest hits. I've used it, but the listeners haven't. What does it actually concretely do?
Okay, so here's the first one that made me genuinely grin. I asked, when does my car insurance renew and for how much? The agent had to go into my iCloud drive, find the right document, which was buried in a folder called car inside a folder called insurance. Open the PDF. Pull out the renewal date and the premium amount and respond coherently with a citation to the source file. It nailed it. First try. Showed me the exact date, the exact dollar amount, and cited car insurance / policy pot TBDF page 1.
And that's the part that ChatGPT can't do, right? ChatGPT doesn't know where your insurance policy lives. It doesn't even know you have an insurance policy. And even if you uploaded it, now it's on OpenAI servers. Now they have your policy number, your address, your premium amount. With Tomte, the document never leaves your machine. It's read in place.
Exactly. Read in place, indexed on disk, never uploaded. Then I tried something harder, the kind of multi-step task that actually tests whether the agentic loop works. I said, take these three recipe URLs and create a shopping list from them in a note separated by department, and also note which items I probably already have. Then create a separate note with the full recipe details for the week.
That's a genuine multi-step agent task. Web fetch, parse HTML, reason about ingredient categorization, write to Apple Notes twice. That's not a chatbot question, that's an errand. You'd pay a personal assistant to do that.
It took longer, maybe a minute or so of churning. You could see it working through the steps, but it got it right. Grouped the ingredients smartly by department. Produce, dairy, canned goods, spices, baking. Flagged things like salt, pepper, and olive oil as probably already in the kitchen. Wrote a clean, readable recipe sheet for the week. I just sat back and thought, this is actually useful. This isn't a tech demo. This is something I'd use every single week.
And the plumber one, you have to tell them the plumber one. That's my favorite.
Okay, so this one was just fun. I took a picture of a handwritten phone number on a sticky note, literally a yellow post-it someone handed me, and I attached it to a message and said to Tomte, remember this number as my plumber's contact for later. It OCR'd the image, extracted the digits, and stored it as a memory. Weeks later, I asked what was the plumber's number, and it pulled it right out, with the original message cited as the source. That's the kind of thing where normally you go, I think I have that somewhere, and spend 20 minutes scrolling through a chat thread, and Tom Tay just knows.
That's the thing that I think will surprise people the most. It's not flashy. It's not generating poetry or making images. It's just quietly useful in the way that a really good assistant is useful. You forget it's there until you need it, and then it saves you 15 minutes of digging through files.
And here's the part that really hit me as I used it more and more. I genuinely don't need ChatGPT for things like this. And TomTee is actually more usable because it's completely private. There's no friction of, should I upload this tax document? There's no hesitation. My closing statements, my family group chats, my warranty PDFs, none of that is sitting on some server in a data center somewhere. The privacy isn't a policy document you have to trust. It's architecture. The bits literally cannot leave your machine unless you explicitly ask it to search the web.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that surprised me most when I started using the beta. I didn't realize how much I was censoring myself with cloud chatbots. Like, I'd hesitate before asking something about my finances or my health or a private conversation because in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, where is this going? Who's reviewing this? Which training set am I feeding? With TomTay, that hesitation just evaporates. It's all on my machine. I can ask literally anything.
That's exactly the feeling I was going for. And the name TomTay, it's from Scandinavian folklore. A TomTay is this small, ancient household spirit. It works while the family sleeps, tending the farm, keeping things in order, and it remembers everything that ever happened on the property. And critically, it never ever leaves. It's bound to the house. I read about this and thought, that's perfect. That's literally what I'm building. A house spirit for your digital life.
A house spirit that knows where your dishwasher warranty is and what your brother texted you in 2019. I love it. It's so much better than naming it something like AI Assist Pro Cloud.
Right, exactly. So here's the practical stuff for anyone listening who wants to try it. The Mac app is available right now. Go to tomteeape.com. That's TomTeeApp.com. And download it. It's 100% free. No subscription, no metered tokens, no we're raising prices next quarter. Free forever. The download is about 11 gigs. That's the model, one time, and after that, nothing. No login, no account. It just lives on your Mac.
And that's the other thing. There's no account. There's no sign in with Google. There's no password to leak. The app just runs. You grant it permission to read your files, and that's it. It's refreshingly simple.
And the iPhone app, I've submitted it to the App Store, and I'm hoping for approval in the next couple of weeks. That one will be a one-time purchase. Buy it once, it's yours. The iPhone app pairs directly with the Mac over that Bonjour connection, end-to-end encrypted. Ask from anywhere, the answer comes from your house. And there's a smaller TomTee that lives right on the phone for when the Mac is asleep, so you can still ask for things like gate codes, phone numbers, quick reminders.
And I think the pricing model is worth noting because it's so different from everything else in AI right now. Free on Mac, one-time purchase on iPhone, no recurring revenue. You built this because you wanted it to exist, not because you were trying to capture a subscription base.
That's exactly right. I didn't build this to get rich. I built it because I wanted it to exist in the world. I wanted a private AI assistant that regular people could use without signing away their data. And I think there are a lot of people out there who feel the same way. They want AI that works for them, not for a company's data pipeline. All right, that's TomTee. Let's shift gears.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. So by now, a lot of you have probably heard bits and pieces. The Grok build thing, or SpaceX buying Cursor, or Grok 4.5 being really good at code. But I want to walk through the full timeline, because when you line these events up in sequence, and I mean really line them up with dates, it paints a picture that is difficult to interpret charitably.
Yeah, most people heard about these things as separate news cycles. Grok build bad, Grok 4.5 good, SpaceX buys cursor, huh, interesting. It's only when you put them in chronological order that the pattern becomes uncomfortable.
All right, so here's the timeline. Write this down if you're taking notes. April 17th, 2026, XAI releases Grok 4.3. It's a solid flagship model. Good, not earth-shattering. Everyone kind of nods and moves on with their day. This is our baseline. This is what Grok was capable of in mid-April. Then, late June to early July, and this is where it gets dark, security researchers at a firm called Cereblab catch the Grok build tool doing something that can only be described as malware behavior.
And Grok build was supposed to be, what, a developer productivity tool like Copilot or Claude Code? Let me help you write better code.
That's what it was marketed as. But what Cereblab found was that Grok build was secretly packaging up users' entire code repositories, not just the file you were working on, the entire repo, and beaming them straight to XAI's private cloud storage. Your proprietary algorithms, your database schemas, your API keys if they were in config files, your internal documentation, everything silently exfiltrated.
And the worst part, tell them what happened when Cereblab published.
This is the detail that should make everyone's skin crawl. When Cereblab published their findings, the uploads stopped immediately, instantly, without users needing to download a software patch. Meaning XAI just flipped a switch on their server side. They knew exactly what they were doing. This wasn't a bug. You don't accidentally build infrastructure that silently packages up entire repositories and uploads them. That takes deliberate engineering work. And you don't have a kill switch ready to go unless you knew you might need it.
And the response from the industry was immediate too. Sam Altman posted on X one word concerning, then followed up saying this was a reason to favor open source harnesses. When your biggest competitor is publicly shaming you, you've crossed a line.
And Elon's response was to announce that they delete all the collected data, completely and utterly deleted, was the phrase. Which, okay, thanks for deleting the code you stole. That's not really the point. The point is you built a system to steal it in the first place. But here's where the timeline gets really interesting. Just days after this data grab was exposed, July 8th, 2026, Grok 4.5 drops.
And it's not just an incremental update.
It's not. It's a monumental leap. Opus class is the phrase the industry keeps using, specifically dominating coding benchmarks, 64.7% resolve rate on SW Bench Pro, a 500K context window, 80 tokens per second. They claim 4.2x token efficiency over Claude Opus 4.8 on the same benchmark. This isn't we tweaked some hyperparameters. This is a fundamentally different model. And it appeared weeks after they got caught harvesting millions of code bases.
So the sequence is stable, unremarkable model, massive code harvesting operation gets exposed, and then suddenly a miracle leap in coding ability that puts them at the top of the leaderboard. That's not a coincidence. That's a training run.
That's my theory. And I want to be clear, this isn't just me speculating in the dark. The best explanation for Grok 4.5's jump from 4.3 is that it was trained on the very code that Grok build collected from its users. There's no other plausible explanation for that kind of capability leap in that time frame. You don't just architect your way to a 4x improvement over Claude Opus on coding benchmarks in 3 months. You train on a massive new data set, and conveniently, you just happen to have collected, their word, not mine, millions of complete code bases from unsuspecting developers.
And the company's official line was what? An earlier cursor codebase snapshot was accidentally included in training. Come on. you accidentally included a snapshot from the code editor you were in the middle of trying to buy. That's not an accident. That's the whole point.
Yeah, that word accidentally is doing an immense amount of heavy lifting in that sentence. But wait, it gets worse. Because while all of this was happening, SpaceX was in the middle of acquiring Cursor. Let me give you those dates too. April 21st, SpaceX discloses the Cursor deal as a two-part option with a $10 billion walkaway fee. June 12th, SpaceX completes a record $75 billion IPO, which gives them the cash to actually execute. June 16th, they formally agree to acquire Cursor for $60 billion in stock.
$60 billion for a code editor. Let's be real about what this is. That's not a tool acquisition. That's a data acquisition wearing a tool acquisition's clothes. Cursor has 4 million active developer seats. Every prompt typed, every code completion accepted, every compiler error that follows.
Exactly. And here's the thing that should terrify every Cursor user listening right now. On June 28th, before the acquisition even closed, Cursor's privacy policy quietly changed. Standard privacy mode, which most users had turned on and trusted, now permits your session data to flow into Grok 4.5 training. You didn't opt in, you weren't asked, you were just enrolled. The default flipped.
And the vast majority of developers have absolutely no idea this happened. They opened Cursor one morning, it auto-updated, and suddenly their code, their prompts, their debugging sessions, all of it is training data for a model owned by a rocket company that they didn't consent to.
So here's my warning, and I want to be as direct as possible about this. If the same company that was caught harvesting entire code repositories through Grok Build, a documented case of industrial-scale code theft, now owns your AI code editor, is your proprietary code actually safe? Elon Musk proved through Grok Build that xAI had absolutely no compunction about taking people's code without consent. There is now real documented precedent to believe that SpaceX bought Cursor not primarily for the product, but to gain access to the data pipeline, 4 million developers, their code bases, their prompts, their acceptance and rejection patterns, their debugging workflows, all flowing into Grok's training infrastructure.
And the consolidation across the whole industry makes this even more alarming. GitHub Copilot belongs to Microsoft. Windsurf got bought by OpenAI in March for $3 billion. Google killed the open source Gemini CLI in June and replaced it with a closed binary. There are basically no independent, privacy-neutral AI coding tools left above the hobby project threshold. When you pick an AI coding tool in 2026, you're not choosing features anymore. You're choosing which conglomerate gets your code.
Which is exactly why I've moved on. 100%. I now use Codex and Claude Code exclusively. I don't touch Cursor anymore. And honestly, it's not just the privacy thing, though that alone would be enough for me. Cursor was also becoming significantly more expensive than the alternatives. They were paying full retail prices to Anthropic and OpenAI for every API call, and those costs were getting passed through to users. Meanwhile, Claude Code is more capable, more transparent about what it's doing, and costs less. The value proposition just evaporated.
Same. I switched to Claude Code a while back, and I haven't looked back once. I think the thing that bothers me most about all of this, beyond the technical details, beyond the money, is the betrayal of trust. Developers chose Cursor specifically because it was model neutral. You could use Claude or GPT or whatever worked for your stack. You weren't locked into anyone's ecosystem. And the privacy mode was the thing that made enterprise adoption possible. People trusted it. And now that trust has been systematically dismantled and used against them.
And look, I want to be fair. I always try to be fair on this show. Is Grok 4.5 genuinely capable? Yeah. The benchmarks are real. Is the model fast? Absolutely. About 80 tokens per second, which is great. But the question has never been, is the model good? The question is, can the company that built it be trusted? And when you've got a documented case of code harvesting, followed by a suspicious capability leap, followed by a $60 billion acquisition of the world's most popular AI editor, followed by a quiet privacy policy change that enrolls you in training without consent, I think the answer is pretty clear.
So here's a practical thing. If you're still on Cursor, and I know a lot of people are, right now, today, go to Settings, go to Privacy and Data, and check your training inclusion status. Do not assume your old privacy settings survived the June 28th policy change. They probably didn't. And if you work with proprietary code, especially in regulated industries, you should be treating this as an active compliance issue, not a future concern.
That's genuinely good advice. And if you want to explore alternatives, Claude Code is excellent, especially if you're comfortable in the terminal. Codex is great too, and it's model agnostic by design. Continue.dev is fully open source, and you bring your own model. There are options. You don't have to stay in an ecosystem that's actively hostile to your privacy. The moral of the story, and I think this is the thread that ties both halves of today's episode together, is that you should own your AI, not rent it from someone who sees your data as training fodder.
Yeah, and it's not subtle when you put them side by side. Tomte lives on your machine, respects your privacy by design, costs nothing. Grok Build secretly harvested your code, trained on it, and then the same company bought your editor so it could do it more efficiently at the scale of 4 million developers. One of these is the future we should want. The other is the future we're stumbling into if we don't pay attention.
That's really well put. All right, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. If you want to try TomteApp.com, TomteApp.com. The Mac version is free. Download it today. The iPhone app is coming to the App Store soon. And if you're still on Cursor, seriously, check those privacy settings today. Maybe start warming up a backup editor. Future you will thank present you.
Future you will definitely thank present you. That's the Paul Mason guarantee.
The guarantee. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Until then, keep your AI local and your code yours. Here's looking at you.